Hello everyone, welcome all of you to Nikki Lyle Creative Presents of Industry Leaders, where today I'm joined by very special guest Sophie Wirth. Welcome Sophie, thank you for joining me.
Thank you for having me.
So Sophie is currently heading up global recruitment over at Oatly, and previously to that was at Wieden and Kennedy for just over 8 years. So the way that these sessions work is that we've got a Q&A tab. I've got loads of questions for Sophie, and we're going to allow about 10-15 minutes at the end. So if you do have any burning questions, just ask those and we'll get to those at the end. So over to you, Sophie.
Oh, I'm so glad to be here. That's awesome. You're right. I've only been at Oatly very recently, focusing on global talent acquisition for creative and communications. So still something very, very dear to my heart, which is creative talent. So I'm excited to see what that's like on the client side, but ultimately creative people are creative people. And so we're looking for same things, little tweaks to the right, to the left. So it's, there's so much to talk about.
So my first question is, how did you get to where you are now in your career?
Right. So it's, I never grew up thinking I want to work in advertising. That was never the idea. And I don't think a lot of people do. Some people do. That's not true. I've met people who are like, no, I saw this commercial when I was 8 and I was like, I'm going to be in advertising. That was not me. I came into advertising through account management. I started as an account manager at Wieden Kennedy in Amsterdam, actually. So my baby steps in advertising were at Wieden as an account manager on Nike a long time ago now. And I very quickly realized that maybe that wasn't just the best job for me. I just wanted to be closer to the creative concept. I was very passionate. You could kind of read me like an open book, and you need to be really diplomatic when you're an account person. And I was just like, no, the clients could clearly see on my face what I thought about the whole thing. And it was like, no, I think this is not going to be for me. So I moved to production. And that was like, wow, yes, that's amazing. And my account management skills were very handy into production. And then I'm going to make it short, but then I had my first baby, and then 4 years later, I had my second baby. So I was very focused on being at home with them. So I was like a producer at home of home life and babies, and it was fabulous. And then I came back to freelancing, always in Amsterdam, in the creative industry, as Amsterdam was developing. And the city of Amsterdam was actually giving it a push to really develop the creative industry. And I somehow organically found myself in the middle of that. So I helped a lot of London post-production houses to set up shop here in Amsterdam, and naturally found myself kind of being in the middle of creative people reaching out going, it looks so cool. Like, it looks like there's so many creative jobs in Amsterdam. Can you help me get a job? And I would just connect them with people I knew in Amsterdam. And until one day, organically, that led to being an external recruiter for just a little while for an Australian creative recruiting company called FBI Talent. And then Wieden called me back. Once you're part of Wieden, you're always kind of part of the family. And they said, look, my predecessor had left at the time, and they asked me if I wanted to come and be in charge of recruitment for Wieden Kennedy. And I said, of course. And I have to say that I was in charge of hiring talent across all disciplines, all seniority level. And having been an account person, having been a producer, having been a baby in advertising, and knowing what that feels like and what it takes was incredibly helpful and informed the way I was assessing talent and knowing what it takes and what it asks of people to come and join an agency. So that's the really short version of my journey.
And what changes did you see in Wieden over the years?
Well, it's hard to tell because I was changing as well, right? So I started out, I was really young, and then I came back in and I was older, and I had changed. But what hadn't changed is the DNA of the place and what matters and what they're passionate about. And it was creativity and the work and this incredible passion to make the best possible work. And protecting everything that enables that process to take place, that hadn't changed. It was bigger. It was naturally a little bit more grown up, but I couldn't tell if I was more grown up or if the place was more grown up. You know, your lens on things changes as well. But I think Wieden is a place that has really managed to stay true to itself because the DNA is so strong and the culture is so strong, and the culture hadn't changed either. I was like, wow, that's amazing. It feels very familiar. It hasn't really changed. And the fact that it had remained independent, I think, played a huge part in that, because there wasn't this kind of fundamental change that happens when suddenly agencies fold into big networks, and then that creates change at a sort of molecular level, and that never happened with Wyden.
Yeah, that's one of the things that I do notice. If agencies stay fiercely independent, and it, like you say, that culture is maintained, definitely.
Yeah, for sure.
So how's things going at Oatly at the moment?
It's fabulous and fast and amazing. And it is a brand that, as a recruiter at Wyden of creative talent, I had forever tried to sniff around and going, who are the copywriters? I want them at Wyden. And I just, you know, the writing and the tone of voice of Oatly very much came from the people who started everything. So then I realized, right, I can't really steal these people. That's not going to work. But I was always in awe of this brand and its irreverence. And it did remind me of Wyden in the early days, that sort of like just really strong belief in what they believe in, and just a tad irreverent and quirky and unexpected. And no, we're not going to do things like everyone else, and no, you're not going to find us where you expect to find us. And so coming behind the curtains of that had fascinated me from the outside, and it's such an amazing marketing story of the suddenly the underdog just suddenly being everywhere, and everybody just, you know, knowing about Oatly, that it's really been quite interesting. And what was interesting as well is that when I joined and I put that out on my social media channels and on LinkedIn, so many people reached out to me and said, oh, that is so cool. I want to work at Oatly. I love this brand. And these are creative people. These are people in the creative industry. And I had no idea. I thought maybe I'm the only one that thinks this is super cool, but no, the whole industry and a lot of creative people are really interested in this brand and what this brand has to offer, that maybe agencies are not able to offer in the same way, is a sense of purpose. I mean, of really just like, because Oatly is first and foremost a sustainability company, and they happen to just, you know, use oat milk for that. But really their mission number one is to leave the planet in a better shape than we found it, and at least not make it a worse place. And that is attractive for so many people. I'm sure you hear it. Creative talent wants to work somewhere where there's a sense of purpose and where they recognize shared values and beliefs.
Yeah, I agree with you, especially at the moment, due to the pandemic, which I'll get onto later with different questions, but this purpose that people are feeling now, where the pause button has been pressed, and they're like, okay, if I go back to work and into the industry, time is so precious. Exactly. Where do I want to be?
What do I care about? Yeah.
Definitely. Yeah. So your favorite quote is by Grace Hopper, which is, the most dangerous sentence is, we've always done it this way. What about that resonates with you so much?
Because I think if you want to change, and there's things that we need to change, and this could be a whole different conversation, but, you know, especially when it pertains to diversity, inclusion, equity, and all of that, you have to not, you know, if you always look at talent in the same places, you're all going to find the same people, you know. So as it pertains to what you and I do for a living, I find that sentence completely dangerous, because you cannot change if you keep on doing things exactly the same way. It's a bit like, you know, like when Angry Bird was the craze and you tried to kill that piggy, but you always launched the bird the same way and you were expecting a different result. I mean, that's stupidity. It's like, it's not, why are you expecting a different result? So I think that's a very dangerous sentence. It's like, well, you know, this process, we need to be more nimble and faster, but this is the process. This is how we've always done it. I'm like, well, you can see how if that's something that you hang on to, you're never going to be able to change. You're never going to be able to evolve, because you need to evolve with the times. And so I always find that when I get frustrated because I just bang my head against something, it's because I'm banging against an organization, a process, people that just hang on to the way things are done. And I'm always like, well, says who? So who says that we have to do it this way? But of course it takes energy and stamina and courage and time to change things. So I understand why there's like the muscle memory is strong and you want to revert back to what's familiar. but I don't think we can change and grow if we keep doing things the same way. So that's why this sentence really resonates with me. Plus, I love the fact that she's a badass. She's a computer scientist. She was a vice admiral in the U.S. Army. Like, this lady, I don't know if she's alive. I think she is still alive. She's quite advanced in age now, but you should look her up. She's a badass.
Yeah, no, definitely will do. So what's one of the main things that you look for when you're looking for talent?
So it depends, of course, what I need to fill the, you know, who I need to fill the position. But overall, I always say this. I look for people before I look for portfolios, right? So whichever way you decide to put yourself out there, whatever you put out into the world that's going to enable me to find you and get a sense of who you are, I always want to know who you are as a person first. Mm. Your work, the work you've done in the past is great. It's proof and substantiation that you know how to do these things. But we all know it takes a village to make an ad or a campaign. So it's not just you. And you know what? Those things you've done, you're never going to do them again. I'm not hiring you to do these same things. I'm hiring you to have new ideas. So I think what's important for me is to look for people who are comfortable in showing me who they are. That's really good. And that's why I always give advice, like when you write your CV or you put together your portfolio, I want to get a sense of who you are. I have looked, and I don't know about you, Nikki, but I've looked at countless portfolio where I was like, I have no idea who this person is. I can't tell you a single thing about them. And that's such a missed opportunity, because if all you're showing me is ads that have been made and never going to be made again, how do I work with that? Do you find the same, that it's just so important?
Yeah, definitely. And actually, from running all these industry leaders talks, I've run, 24 now? And everyone says, I look for the creative's voice. And actually, yes, when I created my guides, there's a whole exercise in there, which is finding your voice and who you are and how you communicate your voice, because they're hiring a person. And I think that's where people are sometimes a bit misled, because they get lost in things like, oh, how many pages to a CV or a portfolio? And it's like, actually, just forget that for a second. Who are you? And what can you convey the second an email's opened as to who you are and where you've been, but where can you go? Because that's what they want to hire you for, really. Is
what do you care about?
Yeah.
What do you do when you're not? I mean, it's very new at Oatly, so my examples are probably more Wyden centric, because I have 8 years of anecdotes when it comes to Wyden. But I know that when I would present work to my ECDs, I had about 6 minutes on the work, and then they were like, "Okay, great, Soph, but what do they do when they're not making ads?" That was more interesting, because that's you being creative outside of constraints and budgets and client feedback. Like, who are you fundamentally as a creative creature? And I want to get a sense that if I said to you, you are not allowed to do anything creative for 3 months, you would shrivel up and your soul would just like disintegrate, because you are fundamentally creative. So that's what I'm looking for. I'm looking for someone that I go, ooh, I want to talk to this person. Right. Yeah. I can't decide when you show me a bunch of ads if I want to talk to you or not. I mean, I don't know. I want to know, who are you? What do you care about? Are you going to shine through and show yourself, bring your whole self? Because I would add that if there's a company that doesn't like what your full self looks like, well, you don't want to work there anyways. So in a way, that's kind of helpful to kind of run that test and be like, this is who I am unapologetically. This is me. And this is what I care about. And this is what this is me as a creative creature. And yes, I've done these things, and I'm going to want to see, and we can talk about the things that you've made. But it's not the most important thing. And similarly, because there are people who are not necessarily creatives and don't have a portfolio, although I encourage, strategists to have portfolios and account people to have portfolio, because seeing what work they've been involved in is a shorthand to understanding a lot of things about who they are. But your CV, like, so many CVs are the job description. Like, I write the job description. I don't need candidates to give me the job description. Like, I know what an account manager does. I know. So why don't you just, put it on its head and tell me what you've done as an account manager? That's much more interesting. And back to my "we've always done it this way" quote. If you are listening to this podcast, you're interested in working in the creative industry. So, who says that a CV has to look a certain way? Says who? Frankly, says who, you know? Mm-hmm. Make it look like I'm going to go, wow, that's really cool. So I'm a little bit, I know this is a controversial point of view. I find CVs most of the time are completely boring. I personally don't care where you've been to school or if you've been to school. It doesn't matter to me. So if somebody asks you for a CV and you want to work in a creative place, well, you know, there's your opportunity to make something creative, to give me something creative that I'm going to be like, that's really cool. And I'm not going to forget you. Whereas if you go, oh, what's a CV template and what should I do and how many pages? I mean, yes, there are tips. So generally, like 10 years of experience, one page. That's roughly, right? But don't give me like a full paragraph on an internship you did 12 years ago. It doesn't matter. That's water under the bridge. Who cares? So if you're going to decide how to build your CV, maybe rethink it creatively, like reinvent the CV. Why not? Like that would catch my eye. But generally, elaborate the most in your most recent position. And as you go back in time, just more and more succinct. You don't need to be giving me the whole lowdown on the 5 internships you did 10 years ago, because you're not that anymore. You're not this person anymore.
Yeah, definitely. And I always say to designers, get rid of languages such as I'm a conscientious, hardworking, have strong attention to detail, because they're going to see that by the portfolio that's being presented if someone is that kind of person. And I always say, almost imagine you're like a copywriter. Even copywriters, sometimes I have to say to them, your job is limiting text, and you need to do that with your own CV as well. Yeah. And I think that's a really good point.
Yeah. If you're a copywriter, I'm going to evaluate who you are as a person. I'm going to look at your ability to come up with ideas, so your conceptual ability, but I'm also going to look at your craft. So if you're a copywriter, I'm going to assume that every word that you put out there for me to see, whether it's your portfolio, your email to me or whatever, is the best that you can write.
Yeah.
Show me. If you're an art director, I'm going to look at your portfolio and assume that that is the best that you can do. That is you shining at your top level of being an art director or a designer, because there's no client, there's no feedback to make it worse. So you've got to shine in those mediums too, because those things tell me something about you and your craft ability almost as much as the campaigns that you've worked on in the past.
Yeah, this is it. And it's so important to present yourself packaged up in that way.
Yeah,
exactly as you said, Sophie, in regards to this is your chance to really show who you are without critique and feedback and all that. And that's something I really try to stress when people are putting together their applications, is the importance of your voice and you mm-hmm. and getting that in there. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, what are the big no-nos that they should absolutely not do when putting together their CVs or folios?
Yeah, I mean, I think you can ask, there's as many pet peeves as there are recruiters. One of my pet peeves is candidates coming to me going, I am the perfect fit for your company. And I'm like, well, why don't you let me decide that?
Yeah.
How do you know? Like, I love the confidence, but I think there's other ways to be confident. And it's the big no-nos is too many words. Like, I mean, and everybody in the creative industry is more of a visual person. And if your email drowns me in words and your CV drowns me in words, and you forget that I only have a limited amount of time to really look at you, because you're not the only one. That's, I think, the important thing to put in perspective for candidates, because I know how frustrating it is to reach out and then not get an answer. And I think what's important to understand is that when you're looking for a job or you're dying to go work at Oatly, you like everything, the center of your universe and everything that matters the most is what you're going to bundle together to send it to me, right? And it's the most important thing, and you can't quite breathe until you get an answer, and it's like, wow, and all your friends are asking you and your mom and dad are saying, did you get an answer? And nothing. And I think you have to understand that what that looks like on my end, on my side, is I get 10, 20 a day, right? And so for me, and I have my day-to-day going and my live briefs and my meetings and my this and my that and all of my other things that I do, apart from looking at people who reach out. And I think when you put that in perspective, it helps you to understand that if we take a long time to reply or not reply, it's never personal. It's never a personal affront, or I'm not ghosting you to hurt you. It's just that I'm really busy too. And I think that's where sending me something that's going to grab my attention, because it's going to stand out from the rest, gives you a better chance of me going, I'm not looking for this profile right now, but this is really cool, or it made me laugh, or there's something there that I'm like, I don't need somebody like that now, but I want to get to know this person. So with that in mind, don't send pages and pages and pages. It's not helpful. Whatever you send me, think of it as a tool for me to get to know you. If you think about it like that, you might re-engineer a little bit how you reach out. So big no-no is a 2-page long email with a 2-page long motivation letter and then a wordy CV. And I'm like, too many words. And it's kind, they all kind of say the same thing. Streamline it. Send me an email, put your, what you do in the title of the email. So designer, because when I'm looking for a designer, I might just go through my inbox that I haven't had time to thoroughly go through and go, oh, I wonder if there's any designers that reach out. If your email title is hi, you know, that's not going to help. If your email title is designer looking for work, when I suddenly go, oh, what's in my inbox? And you're going to come up. And that's what I mean by the way you bundle your reach out to me. Think of it as a tool for me to be able to A, find you, and really quickly get a picture of who you are.
Yeah. And that's so important for people to know, is that they need to be able to convey the information of who they are effectively and quickly. And this, an example I always use is, you're almost like a website, and the only people that spend the longest amount of time on the website is the owner of the company or the developer. People just land and they're like, do I want to be here? Is this going to give me what I need? No. And they go. And yeah. Unfortunately, that's just the way it is. Like, when you're looking for talent, it's that kind of ruthless. But if you catch someone's eye and their attention, then they're going to delve a bit more. And that's something I always say to people. No one's going to read pages upon pages. They just won't. I think that's something.
You're in the business of making ads. Ads are typically not pages and pages long. It's the same thing. It's the same challenge of getting people's attention and get them to a place where they're going to buy your product. Fundamentally, this transaction is not different. You know, candidates have something to sell. I'm potentially buying. You got to give me a message that I'm going to go, ooh, that's interesting. I might want to buy that. And it's the same thing that people in the ad industry do every day, which is, through a cleverly packaged bundle of assets, right? Get people to a place where they do what you want them to do. So it's the same thing, except this time the product is you. So you've got to apply the same logic. If you give people communication that's pages and pages and pages long, do you think they're going to read? I mean, if you put pages and pages on a billboard by the side of the road, I can guarantee you, like, that's not going to happen. So apply that same logic when you reach out to recruiters.
Yeah, and that's a really good point that you said about the inbox, because I know that myself's a recruiter and yourself's an internal one. We will do that. We'll look for keywords sometimes, like, oh, branding, design, emotion. And then those people will come up, and then you look into those emails then. So that is really important thing for people to know. Do you look at portfolios first before CVs?
Always.
Yeah, that's what I say 99.9% of the time. I've yet to have someone say CVs first. So far, 100% of the time.
I almost feel like CVs are like a remnant of the past that we can't seem to shake off. And, you know, in some industries, they're absolutely, I mean, you know, I'm talking about our creative, like, little bit nutty industry. But it's like, what can you put in a CV that you haven't already, or that you can't put in your on your website? your website is real, it's internet real estate. That's incredibly powerful to tell me the story of you.
Yeah.
There's no better way. You can put pictures, you can link to stuff that you do somewhere else on the internet. You can put your Instagram feed, you can do a GIF, you can do anything. How does the CV even compete with that? It doesn't. And then you have LinkedIn. Now, CVs are important because typically also when you get hired, they need to have your CV on file for HR and legal purposes and all of that. So it's good to have one. I'm not saying don't have one, but don't sweat it over your CV. Honestly, that's not the most important bit. Not for me. Again, different, you'll find different agencies, different recruiters, people have different points of view. So take what I say with a pinch of salt in a way, like make it right for you. If what I'm saying seems crazy to you, then that's totally fine, because another recruiter might tell you exactly the opposite. But I go to them, I want to see what you've done and I want to see who you are. And the CV is a really, let's be honest, it's a really shitty medium to do that.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's not great.
See, what I advise people to do is just have one page and maybe list the agencies you've been at and maybe just have a couple of dates. So you might have freelanced at X, Y, and Z within those brackets, or been somewhere permanently for X amount of years. That can be useful sometimes if people want to see who is this person. Are they more permanent? Are they more freelance? And then they can tell by the collection of dates on your CV, perhaps.
But also your CV is a snapshot in time.
Yeah.
So I might have your CV on file, Nikki, from 5 years ago. It's obsolete.
Yeah.
It's rubbish. I would go to your LinkedIn profile, and that's why I do encourage creative people to have a LinkedIn presence, because that's alive. You update it as you go. So whenever I check you, it's always going to be up to date. Your CV is obsolete very quickly. So I could keep it on file, but why would I look at it again? Where are you now? And things go fast and people move jobs. So it's just a snapshot. So for me, it's almost like you need to have one for the admin side of things. But is your CV the thing that's going to make a recruiter go, whoa, I need to talk to this person? We're talking creative. Now, maybe if you're a CMO or you're an account person, or maybe then it's a little bit different. But if I think about creatives, I know a lot of creatives don't even have a CV.
Mm.
It doesn't matter. I don't think it gets in the way. I don't think it gets in the way.
No, and that's a really fair point that you made there about LinkedIn and having that up to date, because it's such a powerful tool, LinkedIn, if you can use it effectively.
It is.
Do you like creators to present their work as PDF portfolios or websites? Do you have a preference?
Absolutely. Website. Two reasons for that. Again, the PDF is a snapshot in time.
Yeah.
I have one PDF that I'm going to put somewhere in a remote corner of my computer, but it's going to very quickly become obsolete and out of date. Your website, whenever I go there, I know it's the latest. The other thing I would say is I've had people go, this is me, I'm an art director, hello, here's my email, my CV's attached, I will send you my portfolio PDF via WeTransfer or, you know. And I'm like, oh, no. Two reasons for that, because I'm going to get a WeTransfer. So again, every time you ask me to wait for something else, you run the risk of losing me.
Yeah.
Because you've got my attention now, and now I'm going to be like, all right. And then, oh, I need to go into a meeting. Your WeTransfer email notifications might be 12 emails down when I get back to my desk. So there's a risk. Secondly, if your portfolio PDF is too big to email to me, it's also too big for me to email internally to my hiring managers, to my creative directors, to my ECDs, right? And for the sake of the plant and the trees, we're not going to print out PDFs and physically drop them on people's desks, because that's like last century. So give me a URL, and if I click this and I forward your website to creative directors, ECDs, whatever, they have it, they can go back to it whenever they want. It's not a heavy file that's going to be out of date in 2 months. So for me, I'm like, please don't send me a PDF. Just put it online. The other thing that happens is if I click on WeTransfer, inevitably, people label the file my portfolio. If you look at my download folder on my laptop, there's 20 my portfolios. How do I know which one you are?
Yeah.
And you've lost me again. You've lost me again, right? Because people are not thinking about it as a tool for me. Of course, you go, oh, here's my portfolio. I'm going to call it my portfolio. But they forget that I'm going to receive a lot of them. And if they're all labeled the same, I'm not going to have the time to cross-reference what data they came in, what data I downloaded. Oh, it's got to be the match with this person. So for me, it's a terrible tool. So just have a website.
Okay. And how do you, because that's quite interesting, because some agencies I know, they like PDFs because they like the control of the order in which they see the work. But these are ones that can be attached. So you open an email, you've got a CV there and a portfolio, and it's not that, that WeTransfer thing. That can be a bit of a headache. It really can. Mm-hmm. And people can get lost. But I think what some agencies said about some PDFs is it's the order of how the work's being presented, and almost like you start on your best project and there's a narrative and a flow. In regards to websites, is there a certain way you like websites to be where they might convey the information in that way? Or do you not mind that you go on and then you click on, okay, that looks interesting and that looks interesting, if you see what I'm...
I like it like that. I like it like that. And can I add, I'm not knocking WeTransfer. It's amazing. WeTransfer is not the problem. The problem is sending me a PDF, whichever platform. So WeTransfer is not the problem. It's more like the fact that you send me a PDF. But I prefer a website because, again, I can choose. I curate. So I see my role as I look at a lot of people and I curate. So I look at 100. And I'm like, ooh, these 20, knowing what I know about the company I want to hire for, like, so Oatly for now, right? And the casting that I need to think about to work with this team and the skill set and all of that, I narrow it down. And then within that, I have yet to meet somebody who has a portfolio where everything is amazing or everything is a fit with what I'm looking for. So my role is to go in there and curate for my creative directors or my ECDs. And I'll go, here's Nikki's portfolio. And I take him through it. And I'm like, not everything is awesome or not everything is looks like what we need. But check this out. Check this out. And often at Wyden, in that case, it was the case. The most interesting bit were in the personal projects. I have hired copywriters on the strength of their blogs. Their portfolio were like, but their blogs, you were like, they can write wonderfully. Like, it's amazing. You just want to keep on reading. So it's difficult. If you decide for me what I'm going to find interesting, you run a risk, right? Give me a nice assortment, label it clearly so I know personal projects. I can see what's what. But you don't know what my CDs are going to latch onto. Or my ECDs or my hiring manager. I know that. Whereas if you curate for me, you might have left out something that you thought, nobody wants to see that. And yet it's the thing that we're going to be the most excited about. Yeah. So for that reason, I like having a portfolio and then I can just pick and choose. And I never go through a portfolio, the whole portfolio with creative directors because they don't have the time and their brains don't work like that. They trust me to go, this piece of work I think is amazing. They have the ability to do situational comedy and dialogue. Like, this is an example of that. Here, this personal project shows that they have amazing like creativity and passion. And look, they're amazing lettering project. And this is, and so I build a picture by picking just the bits and bobs that I need to build a profile that I know will resonate with my hiring manager. So in a way, I build the PDF from the website, metaphorically.
Yeah, okay. And it's interesting what you say about personal projects, because Lydia Pang, who is the global design director at Nike, industry legend, when she was actually interviewing with Nike, she showed only personal work, all her passion projects and side hustles, mm-hmm. and that's all mm-hmm. she did. Yeah. And that's why I'm a big advocate for side hustles, because, I mean, I don't always like the word side hustle because that sounds exhausting. Passion project is better because it's meant to be something that excites you creatively, that keeps you going, that's not just the client work that you're being paid for. It's what do you want to create on your own terms?
Yeah. It's also an opportunity because I know how hard it is to get started in the industry. And sometimes you're not getting the briefs that you would like, or you're not in the agency that's making the kind of work that you really just would want to be making. And that's soul crushing for creatives. So pour that as much as you have time, pour that into your personal projects, because your portfolio, your the ads that you've made in the past and you put in the portfolio are, yes, they come out of your brain, but they're a product of the clients you work with, the agency you work at, the culture, what do they care about? Do they protect the creative work? Does it matter? Does it, you know, so it's all of that factors in. So when you show me an ad that you've been the copywriter for, the art director for, I know that this was influenced by so many things. Mm-hmm. And it might not be an accurate reflection of what your potential is as a creative. It's hard to do. So then that's where your passion project could be, where you show me what your potential is. And it's especially important for juniors, I think, for people who get started in the industry, because you might not get the great briefs for a while. It's just the way the industry is, unfortunately. But so with juniors, I always first look like, do they have like passion projects? Do they do things on the side? Because I know that that's always going to be a more faithful representation of what makes them tick and what they have under the hood, then rather than just these first campaign that they get to work on.
Yeah, definitely. And so how does client side compare to agency side?
Well, I mean, I only have a sample of one, and it's Oatly. but I also know a lot of people who have gone client side. What I can see is it's completely different. And at Oatly in particular, there's always this term, it's an in-house agency, you know, this whole conversation going, clients are building in-house agencies. I can tell you for a fact that, yes, Oatly, we are hiring and we're going to be hiring more and more creatives globally, but it's not going to look or feel remotely like an agency, and in all the best possible ways. And you can find, there's really good links online where John Schoolcraft, the CCO, talks about, and if you Google the Oatly Department of Mind Control, and you'll find some keynotes online, there's a lot of stuff online, and anyone who's interested, and you'll understand what I mean by it's nothing like an agency. So I think it's some clients have more or less replicated the agency structure inside the agents, their brand, their client. But it's a bit strange to me, because a lot of the reasons that brands put forward for doing that are because agencies are a certain way, and yet they recreate this exact same system internally. So, you know, that doesn't really make sense. Oatly is doing it completely differently. And so it's familiar for me in so many ways, but it's also completely foreign, but it's very exciting. So I think I would say brand side, I would recommend, especially as a creative, because there's a certain sensibility, just make sure that you go and work or knock on the door of a brand that you love and you feel common values for. I think that's important. Because when you work at an agency, you know, you'll be making ads for toothpaste 1 minute and frozen lasagna the next and sneakers the next. So you get variety. Once you go brand side, that's it. That's all you do. You're going to be doing Oatly or Apple or whatever, or Diageo or whatever, wherever you go. So you got to choose that carefully, because it's not like you could go, "Ooh, I could get a break from Oatly now and ask your CDs if you could work on Nike." That's not happening. You're just working on this one brand. So I would really recommend looking it up, Googling it, getting as much information. Do you like the brand ethos? Do you like the product? Can you relate to that? Because you need to know that that's all you're going to be working on.
Yeah, definitely. And so anyone that's watching this at the moment that's looking for work and they want to reach out to you, what's the best mm-hmm. way for people to get in touch?
So I'm still wrapping my head around that, to be honest. I'm figuring it out. Let me give this a think. What would be the best way?
Do you prefer emails, LinkedIn, people communicating on Twitter? I don't know if you use Twitter much.
No, I need to honestly protect my inbox right now, because I'm onboarding myself.
Yeah.
So I think, with the understanding that I look at everyone, but I'm probably not going to be able to reach out to everyone, I would recommend LinkedIn. I'm probably going to put in place an ecosystem that's going to be very different. But like I said, it's my seventh day at Oatly, so I haven't had a chance. What I did at Wyden is I created an Instagram channel dedicated to talent and stuff like that. So I have great ideas, but I just now I can't have them. They're not there yet. So with the understanding that I'm myself getting started, I think for now, the best way is to find me on LinkedIn and to send me a message. And I will look at everyone, but I have to be honest, I don't think I can get back to people unless you're an exact fit for some of the briefs I have now, because I'm still getting my feet under me. Is that English?
Yeah, no, that's right. And do you know what, Sophie? This is something I try to stress all the time, because there's a lot of chat going around online about, oh, I'm applying and I'm getting ghosted and etc. I think that's not good terminology to be using in recruitment, especially at the moment, because you're making it personal, and it's it's just the fact that there are more people at the moment than there are jobs. I know it is challenging, but try not to take it to heart too much if you don't hear back. Appreciate someone in your position and the amount of messages you're getting. But one thing I quite like people to do, and let me know if you like the same, is maybe even a light follow-up a week and a half later. If someone's quite keen, not bombarding or messaging all the time, but sometimes someone really thinks they're perfect for Oatly and they can back that up. Mm. But at that moment in time, you might not have the right job. Sometimes it can be the luck of at that moment that role does come up. So keeping an eye on your posting perhaps and then reaching out.
Yeah. Following up is an art. It's difficult. But when it's done well, and if you're a writer and you do that well, I'm like, oh, this is nice. Yes, you can follow up, because it has happened to me that I saw it, I looked at it, and then tons of other stuff happened. And then, suddenly there's an open position and you followed up elegantly and lovely and without, because the big no-no's. One big no-no is to write to me in a super passive aggressive way and make me feel like I'm a horrible, horrible person because I didn't get back to you. That doesn't create a really great kind of vibe between us, does it? So I understand the frustration. I know it's hard, and I know times now are even more difficult, but that doesn't help. So that's another big no-no. Like, don't just go like, I can't believe you haven't, da-da-da-da-da. And some people do, and I'm like, wow, like I'm sorry I'm creating all these negative emotions in you, but that's maybe not the best way to follow up, so there's that. I would say, though, to the writers out there, because that I know, Oatly, if you look at the brand voice, it is very much copy-led, and it's delightful, and it's quirky, and it's, and we will be looking for writers that can, in different markets, that can crack that voice. If anybody's interested, there's a good way to try to figure out what that voice is. There's two Bibles out there that anybody can look at that will give you really good clues as to what it takes to be a writer for Oatly. It's the Instagram feed. So go down that rabbit hole and read it all and try to figure out what the formula is. And it's everything that's written on the packaging. So if you have Oatly in your market where you live, look at a pack of Oatly. Look at what's on there. That's the Bible. That will give you invaluable clues as to whether you could be a writer at Oatly. And mark my word, we will be looking for writers. So I just want to put that thought out there.
Okay. And one point I'd like to go back to that you said, Sophie, about these like passive aggressive messages or emails. Very rarely I receive them, but when I do, I think, does this person not realize I'm probably not going to put them forward for a job? Because what they've demonstrated to me is that they have the ability to be quite rude. And if I'm putting someone in a job, say if I found someone for you, I'd like to say, Sophie, this person's lovely. They come across really well. They're a pleasure to work with from my side. Mm-hmm. And then that will give you a confidence. Oh, okay, brilliant. All throughout the process, they've been great with Nikki. They're going to be great with us. But the minute someone says something that makes me go, whoa, hang on a second, unfortunately, that then makes me disregard them as putting them
I agree completely. And because, as we know, the business of advertising and making ads is difficult. It's frustrating. You think everything goes well and then it doesn't go well. And it's just lots of hurdles and it's hard. So if you show me that when things don't go your way, you get ratty and unpleasant and pissy, how are you going to be once you have the job and things don't go your way internally? Exactly to your point. It's a bit like you're not showing good character in this. And I understand the stress and I understand the fear. Like if you don't have a job, it's really terrifying right now. But you have to resist this instinct to just kind of let the fear rule how you're going to reach out, because yes, that is another clue that recruiters will look at and go, well, when things don't go quite the way they want, like then the tone gets a little, you know. So if you want to write that email because it makes you feel better, write it and look at it again the next day before you press send.
Yeah.
If you still think that that's what you want to send, then go ahead. But sometimes it's just in the moment you're just like, I can't, this is so hard. I can't believe why it's so hard. And then it comes out wrong. So just maybe put it aside or ask somebody you trust or a friend to read it and go, does that sound like, do you think this would, and maybe somebody's going to go, no, you're a little like on the edge of rude there.
I think especially at the moment where, every single person in the world has been through a challenge of the pandemic. Yes. We're all feeling it. We all have our own stresses and worries and problems. Mm-hmm. And that's what I say to people, just be more conscientious and even more mindful when you reach out and saying, hey, I hope you're okay considering the state of the world. Just acknowledging that can go really far when you're reaching out to people for jobs.
So,
time is flying. But one thing I do want to ask you is, how do you see that COVID and the pandemic has affected the working world?
Well, I mean, it's really difficult, and it's affecting agencies. It's really sad. Like a lot of people have lost their jobs. But I see good things. So acknowledging that there's a lot of suffering and there's a lot of difficult moments and fear and we don't know, nobody knows, and that's what's difficult. However, I have seen some good things come out of it, and I'd like to focus on those. First of all, I have seen generosity in people helping out. You're a shining example of that, of going, right, all hands on deck, what do people need most now? And you've just completely turned what you do around to give and help. And I see people on LinkedIn going, this person just lost their job, they're excellent at their work. Because there's a lot of excellent people that are losing their jobs right now. It has nothing to do with how good or bad you are at your job. It just is this really horrible situation. And I've seen generosity. I've seen people lifting other people up. I've seen people helping. I've seen initiatives like the Avail list, that just this thing that I didn't know about it. It just came through and it was on my radar, more likely. Maybe it's been around for a while, but it's like, these are all the amazing people that are available now. And you can just go there. Anybody can access it. And it's like, wow. And these are good people that look. So all these incredible initiatives. The other thing that I've seen come out of this that gives me hope is remote working. And I think now people finally see that people can be trusted to work from home. And that to me opens up opportunities for so many people that couldn't, for various reasons, because they couldn't afford to commute into big cities like London, or because they have children at home, or because they can't relocate to where your agency is because they have elderly parents and they need to stay close to them. So, you know, when I was at Wideman, we were bringing freelancers or people, it's like, well, no, we need them in the office, otherwise we can't work. And I was always quietly rolling my eyes at that, going, I know that they don't need to. We have all been forced into this working remotely situation, and we've made it work. And I think a lot of good things are going to come out from this, because it's changed the mindset. It shows that people can be trusted. People want to do a good job. Like this notion that if people work from home, they're going to watch Netflix all day and not do their jobs is insane. We've been proven wrong. So that's one of the really good things, I think. It's going to give flexibility and give opportunities to people who couldn't, because they couldn't afford to pay rent in the big cities. But they're super talented. So there we are. Like it's creating opportunities But in the meantime, it has also created a lot of pain and fear, for sure. So hopefully we'll remember all these good things when we're on the other side of this.
Yeah, I agree. Especially with the remote working thing, I'd love to see how couples are, especially if you have, you know, both parents, like mum and dad at home with the kid, and then thinking about, oh, actually, dad that may have always been out a lot is quite enjoying being at home with the kids. So then you might have more opportunities where companies allow more flexibility.
I think so. Because we now, I mean, when else have we had a worldwide experiment? This has been the worldwide global working from home experiment, and we've made it work because human beings are resourceful. It's worked, and with the help of technology. I mean, God, if this had happened in the 80s, forget it. We would have been faxing each other or something.
And what's been great is that I have been speaking to people such as yourselves in Amsterdam, and all of a sudden the world feels closer because it's this global thing we're going through where we're all connected online, and that's the thing with industry leaders. I'm kind of taking it a bit around the world, so it's not just London-based UK market, it's this global observation of the industry. So we've got a few questions. Thank you so much for answering all of mine, and I'm just going to get to these as well. So if anyone else has any other questions they want to ask, please do. First one is, I'm a communicator, creative and vegan, also a big fan of Oatly. I can think of many reasons why I enjoy working, but why did you choose Oatly? Did they choose you?
It was mutual, I think. We were on each other's radars, you know, sort of. And then it was the opportunity to have conversations with people and then realizing that we were really like-minded and that I could help them and grow in a way that was, you know, I could bring my experience and I could learn from being in an organization like that. So I think it started by, we were in each other's constellations somehow. And then one conversation and then kind of like, yeah, this could be an amazing opportunity. And so grateful that they saw that and they gave me an opportunity to come on board. And I can see already that there's so much to be done and so much I can do, but there's equally so much there is a lot of learning for me and equally unlearning for me. And I think that's unlearning. We don't talk a lot about unlearning, but I think it's as important, if not more, as learning. So back to your early question about what it's like to go brand side, you have to be interested in learning, but you have to be willing to unlearn a lot of things. It was mutual, and it started with a conversation and then like an incredible chemistry, and then it happened on the back of that.
Yeah. And so my next question is, what do you think of using Instagram as a portfolio medium?
I love it. I think it's a great idea. I look on Instagram. I always do deep, like kind of rabbit hole dives on Instagram. I think it's an interesting medium. I like it. A lot of designers, motion designers are on Instagram. It's bite size. I think it's great when designers or anybody has also an Instagram link where they show their work. Because also Instagram is a medium that we work with. So it's interesting to see how you use the medium and if you can find a clever, unusual way to use it. So I do like, there's some groups, there's some ways to follow creatives on Instagram, and I found it to be quite dynamic. I also found it was the reason why I started this WK Talent Instagram channel at Wieden & Kennedy, that was a way to reach out and be visible for a whole different demographic. And with diversity in mind, that was a really interesting tool as well, because you can be in places where interesting people, you know, the people that are not interested in coming to find you, you suddenly can see them in Instagram. And so I'm still wrapping my head around the possibilities, but I really think it's a very interesting tool for recruiters to look for talent and for talent to be showcasing their work.
Yeah, definitely. And so what key thing would you like to say to anyone that's watching this at the moment that is looking for work?
I would say just don't despair. It's rough. It's really rough. But just maybe look at if you've been sending your profile and it's nothing works. Maybe this is an opportunity to just pause, look at what you have. What is the bundle of you that you're sending out into the world? And is it true to you? Are you telling a story about you? Are you visible in there? And maybe just like look at that and see if there's not ways that you could be more on the forefront of that. And then give it another shot. It is difficult, but there's, like I said, a lot of initiatives where you can plug your name on these lists. And Google's going to be your best friend and your network's going to be your best friend. But there's a lot of lists going where people are crowdsourcing names of people who are available and looking for work. And I wouldn't hesitate to reach out to your network. And if there's somebody that still has a job out there that's on LinkedIn that you've worked with and you know that they really value and rate you, ask them if they don't want to go, hey, I know this incredible designer looking for work in this country. Maybe don't think creatively. Just and I know it's difficult because when you're down in the dumps and you're just hurt because you got laid off and it's really hard. Like it's a breakup. It's difficult, and you go through a crisis of doubting yourself and like, why was I the one that they let go? And it's really hard to get your confidence back. But just believe in yourself and then reach out and ask for help. Ask for help, because I have seen that now more than ever, to your point, Nikki, about like people wanting to help and generosity. People want to help because everybody's feeling it. Everybody in one way, shape, or form is feeling the pain and the fear. So reach out, ask for help, and just make sure you don't stay isolated. That's really, really important. Reconnect. And I know it's hard when you just don't feel your best version of yourself and you feel down and you just want to watch Netflix in your pajamas and feel sorry for yourself. It's hard. So on the days that you just need to love yourself and be gentle with yourself, do that. That's fine. But on the days where you feel, okay, I've got some energy, reach out and ask for help. And you'll find that more often than not, people are willing to help.
Yeah, I agree. I think the creative industry is quite a kind, generous place in a lot of ways. It really is. And also, I want a lot of people to know that if you are struggling, you're one of many. Because that's another thing as well from like my Instagram and LinkedIn. And that's the main thing I wanted to do is say to people, you're not alone. Because people that are working from home, they're like, is it just me? Why can't I get any work? Why? And it's like, no. It is the industry. This is what's happening.
Yeah. So many people. And I would say, be open about it. Don't be ashamed that you got laid off. Don't be ashamed that you got laid off. I mean, look, this would be a good time for me to say it. I got laid off. And I went through all the feels that I've just described. And I was feeling sorry for myself and it was difficult. But I am here today and I found an amazing work family again. So it's important just to not isolate yourself and know that there is no shame. Very good people I know and alongside me were very, very good, talented, incredible people that also got laid off. It's not a personal decision. Right now in this context, it's not personal. So now as a recruiter, if I see that you've been laid off during the pandemic, it's not a black mark against your name. It's not like, ooh, maybe this person's not very good. No, there are amazing people that have lost their jobs. So don't carry the shame. Do not, because you shouldn't. You go, right, well, that sucks. That feels horrible. And just go through the emotions and grieve. And it's very important to grieve. But then just go, no, I'm not alone, to your point. And just like, I have nothing to be ashamed of. And I'm going to reach out. And I promise you, the best way to get to your next job is by having conversations, reaching out. Because the number one way that people find jobs is through connections and via. That's how I found this new job that I'm in, right? So just resist the temptation. Be kind to yourself. And when you need to just be home with a cup of tea and under a blanket, that's fine. But also, when you have the energy, just look to the outside and reach out.
Yeah, really good advice. But I'm going to wrap that up there. But I just want to say thank you so much, Sophie. And thank you for everyone that tuned in as well. And there was so much useful information there for people to take on.
It's been a pleasure. So to people out there, you can find me on LinkedIn. And then I promise that I will look at everyone. Promise you. But I might not be able to because I'm still onboarding myself at Oatly. So you've got to give me a hot minute to get situated.
Well, yeah, good luck at the new role at Oatly, and I can't wait to see the developments as well over that way. And
Same here. And thank you, Nikki, for all the amazing work that you do. Like, truly, you are an angel in this industry, and we need more of you. So thank you.
Oh, thank you. Well, I do have a lot of care for the industry. It just makes sense to me to do all this stuff. So thanks for being a part of it.
Keep going.
Right. Take care, everyone.
Bye, everyone.
Bye.